It's the middle of May. It's a 7 a.m. start. And can you believe 100 miles ran before nightfall? Hello and welcome to the Ultra Running Podcast with me, Coach Marshy. Hope you guys are all well. My training continues to get back on track with my journey back to ultra running myself, and hopefully that will come to a conclusion where I can run an ultra towards the end of the year. So we have a guest with us today. So let's bring in our guest. Hello, Alex. How are you, Alex?
I'm all right, Marshy. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. So, obvious question I'm going to ask you without any context. How are you in terms of your body and how are you feeling?
Yeah, my wife told me last night I'm the anomaly of ultra running and that people should not follow my approach. So, yeah, so 10 days ago, I ran the Grim Reaper 100 miler. And yeah, 2 days later, I was back commuting to work. And that's not to gloat. That's just kind of, I suppose, how my body works. It's just I think I've become a lot better at getting used to this sort of distance now. I'm not purveying going out 2 days later and running 2.5 mile commute to work, but just part of my makeup, mate, really. It's you know, running is part of my mental health kind of makeup, and I just love doing it.
So before we go any further, there's lots of things I want to expand on there, but let's ask you who you are, where you're from, what you do, what's your life like. We'll find out those things first.
Okay, so this is like first dates, isn't it, mate?
Speed dating.
I'm Alex Werity. I'm 38 years old. I'm originally from Leicester. Not a Leicester City fan though. Sad day for the City last week, getting relegated. I live now in Reading with my wife and two stepchildren and little baby Byron, who's two. So our first and probably only child together. He's a challenge, but a lovely challenge. I'm a teacher, so I've been teaching for about 15 years, drama and media studies. And in my spare time, I suppose you'd say I'm an ultra runner. I do events. Probably my speciality now is races over 100 miles. I've done 2100 mile plus races. So I've done races like the GUCR, Grand Union Canal Race, which is 145 miles, which I've won twice. I've finished the Spartathlon out in Greece. I've done something called the Canal Slam, which is all three of the canal races in a 12-week period. So they range from 130 miles to 145. And now part of the GB 24-hour squad. So I represented Team GB at Verona back in September. I ran 261 kilometers and lost part of my soul that day. It was they're interesting, these 24-hour races. They are hard, and I've just been selected for World Championships in Taipei later this year. So, yeah, life's busy with everything, along with doing a master's in education, along with a few of the bits and bobs I do for school and outside of school. So, yeah, life is busy, man.
So you would say you do a little bit of running then?
A little bit, but I think we spoke on the day at Grim. It's just like trying to fit it in with all of those things. So I do a lot of run commuting. So I've already done a little treadmill run before our little chat here, and I'll probably go out and do another 10 or 11, just go around the lakes and stuff like that before I go and pick up my boy from nursery. It's just trying to fit it in to like life. I think that's the hardest thing, as you probably know, is fitting everything in.
We'll probably dig into that in a bit, actually. We're going to unpack it a little bit. But let's go back to sort of my intro and the Grim Reaper. So I can give you that impression like I just did in the intro, what my perspective was on it. So, you know, there we were at a race that used to be well-established before the pandemic. It's been away and then it's come back and we've turned up with these new owners. And I would say a different group of runners with some past participants there as well, including yourself, who was probably new to the event. But what we found out was that there was a few of you that had ran a seasoned ultra runner as opposed to maybe beginner ultra runners. And our take on it was, okay, there's a guy that's kept up with the teams here on the first lap. And that's pretty rare in that event from the history of it. And when that happened, I was like, okay, I've talked to your support crew on the day. I get the impression that this guy does a lot of ultra running. This was very early on in the day. And you've managed to run your first lap very quite fast compared to, say, the mass participation on the day. So my impression was, this guy's going to do something special here today. And you didn't let me down. You definitely did what I would call something special on the day. So just give us a little overview of the Grim Reaper and how that race went for you. Talk to me about the terrain and the kind of course itself, and then perhaps the lap format and how that helped or didn't help you on the day.
Yeah, sure. So course was just over 10 miles. It's a beautiful course. I mean, I've written a blog post race, and one thing I did say about it was it's just so picturesque when you come down around the estate and you see this beautiful lake. It's, I would say, primarily tarmac. So for me, someone who does a lot of running in this 24-hour format on tarmac, it kind of played to my advantage with the next percenters on. I knew there was going to be this muddy section because Steve had told me in the build-up there's this about half mile pretty rubbish, muddy section. So I just decided I was going to tiptoe through that. I wouldn't say it was hilly. There was undulating parts. About 2 miles in, there was a pretty steep climb up, but you kind of got that back on the way back because the loop kind of looped back and you kind of came down that. So you made up some time. You got these like flowing fields, which remind me of a race I've done called Autumn 100, where you've just got like a mile and a half of a field in front of you. And it's really nice trail, and yeah, just nice kind of trail, kind of chalky ground. I wouldn't say it was difficult terrain at all. It was once you got into the lap format of it, you knew the bits you could blast down, you knew the bits which were going to be difficult. From my perspective, it got very hard with the heat. I mean, you probably see from my beard here, I call myself the ginger bearded warrior, and I always make the mistake of going out too quick. And it's a mistake I make a lot, because I always feel that you've got to test yourself and see where the body can go. And the A goal was to go sub 15 hours. And I mean, I went out at sub 13 hour pace, and I knew about 5 laps in, it was going to get quite tough with that heat. So I had to hold back and really think about the cooling strategy. So you probably see I've got this buff around my neck, and I always just, you know, this is kind of copycat Cassie, my wife, just wet this throughout and face is cool, just wetting the hair. And I was being sick from about lap 6-7 onwards, and I was just having to rejig the strategy. So rather than blasting the lap, I was walking the hills and then blasting the downs. And it's just being able to use my education in ultra running now and realize that you're going to have to adapt and change things throughout. And the most important things in that sort of environment were keeping cool, taking on some sort of fuel, and keeping moving, man, because beware of the chair. So true. It is. I mean, I sat down for 2 minutes at the end of lap 8 and I could have stayed there for an hour, but I realized I had 2 laps to do. And you constantly got to keep yourself moving. And I saw some lads out on there doing the 100 miler, and they're about, I think I was about 2 or 3 laps ahead of them at this point. And one of them said to me, and I won't mention his name, but he was like, I'm going to walk it from here. And I was kind of like thinking to myself, you've still got 40 miles to do, mate. And I think it's the difference between moving and not moving. And I think that's where maybe people go wrong in this game a little bit, is they think, oh, I've got 50 miles to go, I can just walk it. And it's not as easy as that. It's about the fueling. It's about the fact I spoke to a couple of the runners later who got really cold later on, that temperature drop. And it's about regulation. And it's about having a strategy. And my strategy is quite clear now. I'm going to eat a lot of carbs, and I'm going to try and, you know, balance the pace as much as I can. And I still need to work on it, but you know, over time, you learn things. And I hoped I showed during that Grim Reaper run that you can take on that format. It's not about just finishing it. It's about taking it on and, you know, it was really lovely to kind of finish second team, if that made sense. My mate told me later on that I beat the second team. So,
yeah, you did, yeah. the actual second team that came in were people from my running club for the 100 miler. And I was, you know, I actually wanted them to win the team, but I was buzzing in a different way because I thought, hold on a minute. Not only have they been beaten by someone else, a group of lads that were clearly very competent over 10 miles, but they've been beaten by a solo runner, which has probably never happened at that event in its 13-year history or whatever it's got, you know, and that told me that we were dealing with a runner here that basically what you've just said, knew what they were doing and knew where people would get it wrong. And, you know, you use the phrase, I think, you can take on that event. Do you think that's the advantage of having, like, in your case, I think you had a little table set up with some bits on and like the refuel station for you. Talk to me about that refuel station. Did that really make a difference for you? Does that format give you that ability to do what you just said and take on that fuel?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I had the pack and things like that, but it's always good to have something to aim for each lap, whether it's that little table with Mountain Dew or pizza or whatever is on it. And, you know, Natalie, Steve's wife, who was 5 miles round, that became a little game for me in the end. Like, I've got to get to that 5 mile point so I can soak myself in water, have my flat Coke, say hello, have a bit of banter, have a bit of chat, because you know it yourself, there are dark places in these races, man. I've hallucinated, you know, seen things that aren't there, and you feel utter rubbish at points. Like, I remember speaking to my mate, Danny Hawkins, who's on the squad, and I sent him a message saying, I'm in a hole. And I was about 70 miles in. And he was just like, mate, keep moving. You're fine. And then 10 miles later, I was like, yeah, this is back. And it's about, my wife has always said to me that it will get better. And you've just got to work through those dark places. And they've become easier over time. Because, like, going back about 6 years ago, I did the Grand Union Canal race for the first time in 2017. And I binned it at 95 miles because I basically wasn't strong enough. And it took 2 years of people telling me, you're better than that, to go, okay, so I actually just binned that race because I wasn't strong enough. And it's just been about battle hardening myself to these things and realizing that there's a lot of people in life who have it worse off than me. B, we're doing this because it's fun. And C, that even with things that are fun, they're hard. So it's about working through that hard to get the gains at the end of the day, like the nice trophy and, you know, meeting lovely people. And I think that's the key with things like last Saturday, are meeting people like yourself, meeting people like Steve, you know, talking to, I was speaking to everyone on course, because for me, everyone who's out there is in doing the same thing. I'm just like, one of my wife jokes to me, I just happen to do it a little bit quicker and don't get as much value for my money. But the way I look at it is that everyone's doing the same thing and we've all got our own stories to tell. And my story started about 12 years ago and it's ever changing, man. It's always changing.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second, sort of how you got into it. But I'm going to ask you a question that is a standard question. It is always, what is your family? What is your wife? What is your partner, husband, wife? What does your wife think of all of this? However, before you answer, I get the impression the answer's not perhaps going to be as normal as what we get on this show.
So I met my wife back in 2016. So my wife, Wendy Werity, some people listening to podcasts might know that name, might know her as Wendy Shaw previously. Wendy is a seasoned ultra runner, running coach, kind of wearing a kit today without even realizing I'm wearing it.
Yeah, I can see it, yeah.
Yeah, so met her in 2016 because we were basically part of the same running club and doing the same race, Autumn 100 back in 2016. I'd met her briefly, like at Thames Trot, like, hello. You know, that sort of thing. You're Wendy Shaw and like you're really good ultra running. And she kind of, in a weird sort of way, took me under her wing. I think, you know, as you can see here, I'm devilishly handsome. So she recognized that straight away. No, she, it's so hard to talk about and how much respect I have for her as well in terms of her running. But she has just taught me everything I've known in terms of fueling, strategy. She's a, I think, 3 or 4 time member of the GB 24 hour squad. So she's run at Worlds, Euros twice. She's a European bronze medalist, team bronze medalist back in 2018 in Timisoara, where it was like 35 degrees and ridiculously hot. And she's just, how do I describe her? She is the most stubborn person I know, but in a beautiful way. It's, she never gives up. Whatever adversity is put in front of her, she will just keep working. And I think she's just added that extra layer of belief in me in terms of what I can go out and do. And she jokes to me now that, oh, you just copy me all the time. And it's like, well, it is, but in kind of that being really inspired way. And she is a really inspirational figure in terms of, you know, she had our first child, Byron, 2 years ago. And then 350 days later, went and ran 138, 139 miles in 24 hours to re-qualify for the squad. Wow. So, you know, she shows that there are no limits. And thinking about it makes me quite teary, because she really is, I think, a great ambassador for the sport. And she's probably not as well known as, say, the Debbie Martin Kansanis and the Susie Chans and people like that. But for me, she just has that sort of, I say it because she's my wife and I'm biased, but, you know, that sort of level of respect in terms of, you know, the way that I think women look up to her in the sport and how she carries herself. But yeah, so that's that. And my family just think I'm batshit crazy. So I think my mum and dad up until the last year have kind of been like that old school mentality of, that's quite a long way, son, you know, that's a really long way, you know. And then, you know, they were messaging me during the Grim Reaper going, oh, how far are you in? So I'm 80 miles in. And my dad's like, oh, not long to go now, just 20 miles. So I'm like, all right, dad, do you want to come and do that?
Yeah. So, but a bit of a shift in that kind of way of thinking.
When I did Spartathlon in 2019 and it was 40 degrees, they were like, you can't go and do that in Greece. That's just ridiculous, 153 miles. And I'm like, well, I've run 145 miles quite a few times and the only difference is 40 degree heat. And I just think perspective changes, doesn't it? You know, the way I started my ultra running in 2014 to now, I'm a totally different animal. And I think that's the way you have to look at yourself as an evolving species. I'm always trying to read, always trying to learn. You know, that's my teaching background. But I'm always thinking about what can we do to improve here. And I'm not the finished article by any means. I mean, Verona, yeah, around 261K, mate, but it could have been so much better. My head went down, massively down during that race. And I realized during that race that I'm A, not as good as I think I am. And B, when times get hard, you've got to keep that head up. And that's what James Stewart on the GB squad taught me on that day. You've got to keep that head up and remember that where you come from and how far those feet have traveled. And that'll always stick with me, actually, what he said on that day. Just remember how far your feet have traveled, not just on this day, but in life.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And I think a lot of our listeners can be sort of at a beginner level. Some of the feedback we certainly get regularly from the same people, they are beginners, and hearing things like that is really important and crucial for them to understand, because, you know, it's no easy feat running for that long, let alone, as you've just put it, how far have your feet actually gone in life as well. And that sounds like a really good bit of advice that you received. And, you know, you talk about 2014, quick yes or no. This, from that moment, has this become your sport that you're in and you're kind of all into it?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it's a bit like a drug, isn't it? I mean, I hear a lot of people saying that ultra running is very addictive, and it is because of the experiences you go through. And I call it like this, this experiential kind of different stories. I mean, I have kids. I mean, I'm in my office at work at the moment. You probably see all the running numbers around me, and I had a year at my school. So they often come in, and my role is pastoral, very much working with my year group and trying to help them develop as individuals. And they'll come in and I'll ask about these numbers. And each number is a story.
Yeah.
Each number is, you know, an experience. I mean, I'm looking at the Centurion Track 101 just in front of me there, where I was six hours in and Sorokin broke his 100K world record. But I can always tell my little one that, you know, I beat Alexander Sorokin on that day and won the 100 miler. You know,
yeah.
I mean, he stopped at 100K, didn't he, because he's a beast. But it's each run is an experience and it's a learning experience. And, you know, going back to your question about, in terms of was I all in? I don't think so initially. I mean, I liked it. I did Thames Trot 50. I was first back for my running club. And then in early 2015, I signed up for a 24-hour event called Cotswolds 24, which isn't going anymore. I think the company went bust, sadly. And yeah, I just did that with a friend of mine, Paul, and did 100 miles in about 20-odd hours and couldn't walk for about a week. And yeah, just started developing and realized. And Paul said, I remember something Paul said to me, and I don't know if he was drunk when he said it, but he said, you can be one of GB's best ultra runners. And I just said to him, why? And he said, you don't need to know why, you can be. And that stuck with me. And I've just been developing and learning and, you know, taking things from different people, different perspectives, different learnings. And I'm a student of the game, man. That's the way I look at it. I'm 38 years old. The you know, Steve Holyoake, who's going to be coming out to hopefully crew me at Worlds, he wore numerous GB bests up until his early 50s. So for me, I'm not saying I want to be wearing GB bests till I'm 50s, in my early 50s, but I want to be doing this well for the next 10, 15 years. Because I want the next generation to kind of go, well, look at what that guy did. And I joked before that I like using things to help me. And for me, there's this song by Eminem called Legacy. And I've mentioned it in other places. I love that song. I love what it stands for. It's about building something, like building your house and building a legacy. And I think that's what this is all about. It's, you know, building something which my little one, Byron, can look at. And look at what him and his mum have done and gone, wow, that's pretty cool. I'd quite like to give that a go. Well, if I don't do that, maybe I'll be a good swimmer or something like that. And it's just about going to people. Yeah, you can be in quite a dark place in your life 12 years ago, but look where you are now. So, yeah. And I think that's the way I look at it, man.
That's a massive message there with lots of connotations and understanding behind it. That most people could relate to in some way. And maybe someone who's sitting there in the dark right now might think, actually, hold on, this guy was in a bad place. And now you've built a legacy for yourself, your family, you know, armchair stories, you know, rocking chair moments almost when you're both a little bit gray and old and you can talk to your friends and maybe grandkids and things like that. And, you know, I think just to touch on your wife again, obviously, I can see you wearing the brand in there. We met another runner who, Mark, who won the 40 mile race, who I believe is also coached by Wendy. Is that right?
Yeah, he is.
But he's pretty new to the game, wasn't he?
Yeah, that was his second ultra. He's a speedy boy, though, old Mark Flitton. He's chasing down my marathon time, and he's someone who comes from our sort of mould as well, which is, I think. We don't sell a brand, but if we had a brand, it would just be hard work and, you know, going under the radar. You know, I don't have, Wendy doesn't have thousands of Instagram followers. We don't really, we're not really, well, not sponsored at all. It's for us. It's all about the love of the game and going out on the trails and just enjoying it, man. I think that, I always say to Wendy, I mean, she did 100K last weekend, UK Ultra event, which was really well run, and she loved it. And the last thing I said to her is just go and have fun.
Yeah.
Have a smile on your face and look up and look around you. I mean, it's that I love the musical Hamilton, and there's a line in it where they go, look around, how lucky we are to be alive right now. And I think it's really true. I need to get it tattooed on me somewhere, actually. But it is just how lucky we are to be out on those trails. And even like the 10th, the ninth lap of Grim, I was still looking around going, this is pretty cool. Look at that lake. Look at that over there. Look at that beautiful flowing field. And I think it does. I think ultra running does give you appreciation of what's going on around you, and you do learn a lot about yourself. Sometimes the bad as well. Like, I think maybe a few years ago, I was probably in danger of getting a big ego with all this, and had to realize that I'm just a small fish, really, in a very big pond, and I'm very lucky to be in this pond. And I need to stay grounded, because that's the only way I think how you get better as well. You've got to stay grounded and stay humble,
So
because
sort of
that,
never too high, never too low kind of approach.
yeah, you've got to be you though as well. And I'm very confident. In my job, I'm a drama teacher, so I'm constantly enthusiastic and up, up, up. And I think sometimes people would see me at races and go, "Oh, look at that guy's arrogant, isn't he?" But actually, it's just that confidence. And that's how I run. I run confident. I run, as a mate said, you run with swag. Like, I run with a bit of swag to me, and I quite like that interaction. I remember running past you, and you were like, "How are you feeling?" And I was like, "I'm feeling eep." So not wasn't feeling great at the time,
Yeah,
but
we've got
I'm
it on
quite.
we got it on an Instagram reel. It's not been released yet, but it's coming.
Oh, okay. I can't wait for that moment. I was feeling great, but no, it was. Sometimes you just got to be yourself, and. But I think staying grounded is very important, and appreciating where you've come from and who's been around you to get you to where you're at. That's important.
Yeah, I mean, giving you some feedback on that, watching from the outside, I never saw it as arrogance, but I did see it as confidence. But because I've done the Grim and I've done the 70, so I've been around it a few times in one night. When I saw that, I did see confidence, and I thought this guy will make this today because of the persona that you gave off and the confidence that you held yourself. I never personally felt it was arrogant in any way. I thought it was really actually quite motivational, particularly at the start. I called you over for a quick interview. We did a quick sort of capture of how you felt and whatever. And then you went back on the line and you were on the line and you could see you were a personality on the line. Now, I don't know if that was just natural you or whether you wanted to try and G people up and help them, but it was very, from where I stood, it looked very helpful in the moment. Now, you might have just been being you and not thought anything of it, but I think there were people around you that certainly were kind of, you could see they were nervous, the trepidation was there. They were thinking, God, what's about to happen? And actually, someone like yourself settled it all down. A couple of our runners were in there, they were sort of around you, and it just seemed to settle. Now, I don't know if you said anything, I don't know if you can elaborate if there was anything you did or said, but it looked helpful, is what I would say.
Well, I think for me, Neil, I mean, one of the most important things is paying it forward. I mean, I've been very lucky to have a lot of people who have given me good advice, and I kind of joke now. I mean, I wouldn't give advice. I'm not a coach, so I don't give coaching advice, if that makes sense. My wife has banned me from that after I gave someone my advice about how to taper, and she's like, "No one tapers like you." I'm like, okay. But the advice I would generally give someone is enjoy the day. What are you fueling today? When it gets crap, remember it will get better. You've got to change something, whether it's putting your music in, whether it's giving your wife a quick call. Just keep moving, keep eating something different. And it's all about helping others. Because I've been very lucky, and I had a good chat with a runner who DNF'd the GUCR the other day, and he put a message on Facebook saying, "Oh, he'd had a bad race." And I've met this guy a few times at other races, and I really like this geezer. And I just said, "Well, should we just do a fancy a phone call and just talk it through?" And we just spoke about it for half an hour, and realized that there was a few little things he hadn't thought about, and he's going to sign up to a race later this year now, which is great. And for me, I think, in life, there's always going to be people who you aspire to be like my wife, there's always going to be people who are kind of on a similar level to you. I kind of mentioned Damo Carr in this vein. He's a GB squad member, kind of a rival I've had in different races, but we respect each other a lot. And then there's going to be people who are learning, those people that you should be helping. And I think that's kind of the role here. My role now is to help others, is to keep competing and aspire to kind of be that stoic warrior that my wife is. So, you know.
Yeah, no, and we certainly appreciate you coming on the show, because we want to hear about Grimm. We want to hear about your story. But that, you know, we've had feedback from other episodes where there are people that kind of want to get into this world and do some ultra. And actually they sit and they consume everything, not just this, but, you know, books, other podcasts. And, you know, having people like yourself come on and talk about it is really good and really refreshing. And that's what this platform's about, is trying to pay it forward as well. So I love that you share that in your own way. You share that, and hopefully we can help bridge that gap for people to pay it forward as well, you know, as a platform and a place to do it. In terms of one last question, actually, on the Grimm, just a quick word on Steve and Laura, the new owners, and then also Natalie, Steve's wife. You know, I know they were very, very nervous about taking it on, but they had that excitement where it was more exciting than it was nerves. But any words from you about them and what you thought about it all and how it went?
Oh, it was brilliantly organised. I mean, they're blessed with that setting as well, and the weather. It was picturesque, but the organisation, just everything in the lead up. Steve was brilliant in the lead up in terms of, I had my geeky questions. I wanted to know about the route and about how this would work and how that would work. And it's been so lovely in terms of communicating, asking for a bit of running advice now as well, Steve, which is good too, because I know he's got his backyard ultra this week. So yeah. I'm looking forward to tracking him on that. But no, I mean, for a race that had come back, it didn't feel like it had come back, if that made sense. It looked like it was well established. When I turned up, I was like, this is well organized. You've got all of the setup here. Obviously, you there as well, adding that extra flavor. It just had all of the elements.
Yeah, like, no, cool. It's good to know, because I'm quite biased. You know, I was very on board with Steve at the beginning. Once I found out, we had a chat very quickly, and I was quite interested in bringing the race back itself, but then found out they were doing it. So dropped that and just said, how can I help? Can I come as the podcast? And, you know, I was really passionate about the Grimm Reaper going forward, regardless of who owned it. I just wanted it to be there, because I think whether you're you running for GB or whether you're some of our running club that are getting into ultra running, it has something for everyone. And I think you proved that as well, which was really good. So moving away from the Grimm Reaper then, you mentioned that this started back in 2014, and it sounds like, you know, you've touched on many events and achievements that you've done so far. Sort of what is the overall goal for you sort of moving forward and within this world of ultra running? What is on the bucket list? What do you want to get out of it? You talked about legacy, but, you know, in terms of future achievements, what you got in mind?
Oh, wouldn't it be lovely to go to Worlds and get a team medal, eh? Wouldn't that be good?
Have we got any chance as GB?
The team is strong. They're taking five men and three women, and six men and three women, and all of the six men have run 260 kilometers plus, which makes it the strongest ever GB men's team, 24-hour team, going to an event. You've got Robbie Britton, the GB 24-hour record holder. You've got Dan Lawson. You know, Damo Carr's run 262 kilometres. Danny Hawkins, Paul Maskell have run 265. You've got a deep, deep squad there of blokes, and three of them need to hit the target. So I think you're going to have to get three blokes over 270k, though, to get anywhere near a medal now, with the Poles and the USA and obviously Alexander Sorokin pretty much carrying the Lithuanian team on his back. So, yeah. I mean, it would be amazing to get a team medal and, you know, copycat my wife again with her bronze that she got in 2018. But for me, just doing different events. I love doing different events now. I think I went through a couple of years where I was just like, oh, I'll do a lot of the Centurion events, I think, because I was quite new to 100 miling, and they're very safe events, as James Elson would tell you. They're very good for the newbies, and they're great. They're very well organized. But I like trying something new. So, yeah, I mean, Thames Ring 250 miler really appeals. That's a bucket list race. It's like goes on the Grand Union and goes around the Thames Path. And I'd like to go and have a go at the course record on that and get something with a 40 on it, so like a 49 hour or something. That would be amazing. And you know, there's the bucket list races, isn't there, like Western States and Badwater. But I just don't think, with my current, how I handled that heat on Saturday, I think I need a lot more heat acclimatization training before I'd take on anything like that. But yes, just, you know, taking what comes in front of me. I'm always shocked how many cool and niche races there are. And, you know, one day go and do the Berlin 100 as well. Like the Berlin Wall 100 really appeals because it's fast and flat. And you can have someone in a bike next to you for the whole 100 miles. So hopefully Byron will be old enough by then. So get, when he's a bit older, maybe come and cycle some of that with his mum and dad, which would be pretty cool.
That'd
So
be a great
yeah,
little family experience, actually. That'd be cool.
sure he's going to hate it, Neil, to be honest, but he's been born into it now, so he has to.
And sort of when you talk about the world champs, I think for me, it took me, bearing in mind I actually did my first ultra in 2014, and I'm about the same age as you. So for everyone that's listening to this or watching this, there is a note there and a lesson. You know, I went off and did Ironman and then a 70-mile ultra, and then focused on having a fitness business and a CrossFit type of gym, but still do a lot of running. I guess the alternative would be to go a little bit all in on ultra running and end up representing GB like you have. You know, we kind of started at the same place, and you know, you've become a great ultra runner, Alex. And I think part of that journey is everyone always looks for like this world championships in whatever sport it is they do. You know, HYROX is a big new sport, and I was at the World Champs at the weekend, and all of a sudden it's grown and it's exponential growth over year on year. And when I got into ultras, I did bother looking at the world champs, but some people were like, what is the world championships for ultra running? And I think people don't really understand what it is and what these 24-hour races involve. Because when I found out, I was like, oh wow. So could you just tell everyone what it involves and how it works? And then I assume it's the same for the Europeans, but yeah, go on.
Okay, so I'll go over my first experience then, which was in September last year. So I was selected to run for GB, the European 24-hour championships out in Verona, Italy. Now, 24-hour running is as it sounds. You are running around a lapped circuit for 24 hours. When the clock starts, it starts, and then 24 hours later, it ends. And it's basically how far have you run in that 24 hours? Now, the course in Verona was the least picturesque. I mean, you think Verona, you think Romeo and Juliet's balcony. I mean, as a drama teacher, I was anticipating this amazing route. What we got was the kind of back end of a kind of industrial estate, and Toilet Alley, which was the most beautiful kind of mugging spot you would ever find in the whole of Europe, to be honest. And this is the thing about 24-hour racing, and I want to stress this, it is not pretty. Yeah. And I think when I was running around, a couple of people were moaning, like, oh, this route's like, oh, it's not very nice. And actually, for the first couple of laps, I was probably that person. But then I kind of realized that's kind of what 24-hour racing is. It's ugly, it's a bit dirty and grimy in terms of you're going to have to find a dark place you're going to need to go to keep going. Now, we had crew tents on the 400 meter track. So you run around the track and then you go out for about a kilometer and run round the outside of the athletics track. So we had our crew there. So I had Paul McGee crewing me, and he was crewing Gareth Pritchard as well. So you see them about every 1500 meters. So the lap in Verona was 1500 meters. And yeah, you've just, you know, you've got your toilet stops, but you were basically moving for 24 hours and seeing how far you can go. And I went out at just below 8 minute miling pace for that. And I think I averaged about, I think it was about 8:45 average for the 24 hours. And that was with meltdowns and toilet stops and things. But Mr. Sorokin went about 320K, about nearly 200 miles. So it just, it is pushing the limits of the human body, but also the mind. As I said to you during that race, I mean, I was flying up until about 16 hours. And then I just had a really bad dark spell. I can't describe it. I was in this like black hole, and I felt like I'm never going to be able to get out of this black hole. And then James Stewart, bless him, he'd had a really bad race, came in as my assist. He was running and just spent a few hours with me, just reminding me what this is all about and keeping that head up. And then I burst into tears when I went past 250 kilometers because I was just like broke. I think I was just done in, and I had such a hard day. And then Wendy, who'd had a difficult race, came back out and was like, come on, do it for Byron. And I don't know, something just clicked. And I've spoken to people about this, and I don't know what happened during that last half hour, but it was almost like the T1000 like regenerated. And but the last half hour, I mean, if you ever want to see like theatre at its finest, come and watch the last half hour of a 24-hour race, because it is absolute carnage. People like sprinting. I was going around the track like 6:30s and I'd run for 23 hours and 40 minutes. Like, God knows where it came from. But I think my little brother, God rest his soul, was like on my shoulder pushing me. And it saved my place. Yeah. It saved my place at Worlds. And that last half hour, as I said it to James afterwards, was showing people what I'm all about. I'm not that sniveling mess crying anymore. That's not who I am. Who I am is this last half hour. That's who I am. And that's what I love about this sport, man. It honestly, you learn so much about yourself, the good, the bad, the ugly, and you learn that you can work your way through those dark spots in life, and that you're never done. I mean, I think was it Goggins or someone said, when you, I can't remember it was him, he said, when you think you're done, you're actually about 40% done.
Dan, yeah, so no, it was.
It was in that Goggins,
first
wasn't
book.
It?
Yeah, it's that first book. He definitely said that. And it sounds like there's a story there, Alex, to be honest. You know, you talk about your brother. I assume, unfortunately, he's passed away. And, you know, it's probably a deep source of pain for you. And it sounds like that might have been a dark place you were in. But do you use that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I started this whole thing, started running 2012 because it was basically in a really bad place in my life. And I think I look back on it now and just, I kind of cringe really that I was acting the way I was. My brother passed away in 2010, quite suddenly, had epilepsy and had quite a severe epileptic seizure. And basically for 18 months, I was a bit of a knob, if I'm being honest. And I want to explain that. So, you know, there's dealing with grief and then there's not dealing with grief. And basically, I wasn't dealing with grief. I was blaming everyone else for what was going on around me and just going out and being happy chappy and just not really in a great place. And I took quite a good friend of mine, Joe, to come up to me and go, you're just not yourself anymore, mate. And if you keep acting how you are, then you're just no one's going to hang around you. And kind of weirdly, I was looking at getting fit and I'd put on quite a lot of weight at the time. So I was about 17, 18. Well, I was probably about 17 stone at my largest. And I just thought I'll start this running thing, and then got into it and noticed the weight dropping off, and kids at school started noticing as well. And I got this reputation as this crazy running guy, which was quite funny at school. Entered Reading Half Marathon. And realised that there's a way of dealing with depression, and the way of dealing with depression is not blaming people for things you can't control. It's about taking control. And don't get me wrong, there's still days now where I get down, and I'm not saying running is my cure, but what I'm saying is that I've got things now and strategies to deal with the darkness that I've spoken to, facing it.
Yeah, no, I cannot relate to what you went through, but I can relate to that idea, because the whole don't judge a book by its cover. I did that when I was in a really dark place myself in 2010, and it was called Running Free. Our shooting bit was about running. The lady did run. It was about locked in syndrome, and I've got to say, this idea of running free, I was kind of running free myself. And it sounds like you may use running in a similar way. You kind of ran. That was your mechanism for dealing with depression. And like you said, there's still those dark days now. And I get that as well. But that's a great story to hear that you have found a way to cope with it. And as you put it, the uncontrollable, right?
Yeah, I mean, we like to think we know ourselves well, don't we? And it's only when that horrible life event sometimes happens, or we find ourselves in this difficult place, that we have to face those demons and exorcise them, as I talk about quite a lot. But the great thing about demons are that they're quite high up, and that you can put them in different places and kind of keep you there for now. And it's just, as I said, learning strategies to deal with them. And I think talking quite openly about mental health is important too. I mean, part of me being quite honest about it, and I'm honest about it with the kids at school. I've done talks at my school about mental health and running, and why I've done it, and how it's helped me take control of myself and kind of define who I want to be, than who I wasn't, if that makes sense. This guy who was pretending he was like well happy and chirpy, it was almost like Bez out of the Happy Mondays. It was a joke, man. I look back on it now and I just cringe. And this person who I am now is who I am, you know, is this hopefully kind, caring, you know, person who would like to help people.
And that last half hour of that European champs or world champs.
Oh yeah, that crazy fool, yeah, who was like doing, weird kind of John Cena, you can't see me signs, and he quite enjoying himself in a weird
Yeah.
sort of way, enjoying it and enjoying the pain.
Yeah, no. Great. Yeah, it's great to hear. And hearing all of this is, it's very it makes us realize that we're all on a journey, we're all going for our own stuff, and everyone's got their own things. But like you said, strategies for dealing with it. How do we get through it? What is the coping mechanisms? And I don't think anyone's got the magic answer, but I think you and I would both be in agreement that running is a very good strategy.
Yeah, it's good routine, isn't it? Because you get some fresh air, you can sometimes spend some time with people, you get to see the landscape. And in a weird sort of way, running is sort of a selfish thing because you're kind of doing it on your own. And I don't think, and I mean this in the nicest possible way, that being a little bit selfish is a bad thing. You know, listened to an interview that Stephen Hendry, like seven-time snooker world champion, and he spoke about winning and dominating snooker. And he said, to get that good, I had to be selfish. I had to go to my wife, well, I'm sorry, I'm going to be practicing for 9 hours today. And I've learned, with having Byron around, I've had to compromise a lot more. And obviously, Wendy trains and I train and things like that. But I think, when it for the, for those going into the sport, and for those, I suppose, at the level I'm at right now, think about what you want to get out of it. Where do you want to go with it? And if you're gonna, do it well and enjoy it, think about how it fits into your own life. So, for example, I'm probably commuting to work 4 out of 5 days at the moment, with taking Byron to nursery another day. And I think you just have to find that balance in your life.
Yeah, no, cool. Yeah, balance is key, and especially our son's slightly older than Byron, but we're in a similar boat where there's been those compromises, and I've had to learn. And I think no one can really prepare you for that. And you could have taken a massive hit, but there is still a little bit of selfishness got to be there for you to get the miles in. But it sounds like you fit those in within a commute or something that you would do anyway. So that sounds like another way to fit in that extra training that you need to at that level. So one more question from me. With with a beginner, no, not a beginner, let's just say in general, what would you say to someone if they, what are your top three tips for somebody that really wants to progress in ultra running?
Okay, so let's think about the mistakes that I've made and still make. All right, so I've got Wendy's voice in my head here. All right, less jump miles, more purposeful miles. So occasionally my wife will look at my Strava, which I don't think she wants to very much because she looks at it and she goes, "Why did you just do that run?" But what is the purpose of the run you're doing? Why are you doing it? So think about less junk, more purpose. What else would I say? Look at your fueling during races. I can still remember bonking hard at the Shakespeare Marathon in 2014 because I had one gel in about 3.5 hours. So you've got to look at your fueling and breaking the race down as well, especially in your ultras. Like 100 miles is a freaking long way. When I tell the kids at school about it, they look at me like this and they go, "What?" But actually, I say to them, "Well, if I knew at the Grim it was 10 10-mile laps." So you break that down and you break the course down, and it becomes a lot easier when you chunk it. So at Grand Union Canal in 2021, where I think I ran about 23 hours for the 145 miles, I treated it as a 100-mile race and then a 45-mile race at the end. So when I got to 100, flick the switch, reset, race two, fuel, go on from there. And it makes it a lot easier for yourself. But just think about Simon Sinek talks about this a lot. What is your why? I know it sounds so cheesy, but why are you doing it? And I bet you, like, if you ask 99% of them, they wouldn't say for the medals or the t-shirts.
No.
The medals and the t-shirts, and don't get me wrong, mate, those trophies at home are lovely. They're lovely to look at. But actually, we do it to learn something about ourselves. We do it because it challenges us. And that's why we do it. That's why you're talking about Ultra Late this year, not because you want a medal or a t-shirt. You've got loads of those. I've given loads away. What we haven't got is that experience. And that's what ultra running is for me. It's experience, it's learning, it's meeting new people. And to sum it up, I met my wife through running, some of my best mates through running. Would I be sitting here talking to you if I hadn't put on those shoes in 2012 and gone down the Thames for that 1 mile run where I felt like shit? No. Am I glad I did? Of course. And I think that would be my message.
And I think you're right. The why is important. Like you said earlier, each one of those numbers behind you, each medal, each t-shirt, there is a story. There is a reason why you were out there, and it doesn't have anything to do with what you like. It normally doesn't have a lot to do with running, actually. It normally has more to do with yourself. So I completely share that and agree with that advice. I think that's awesome. And yeah, we obviously have a few similarities in story, but you've obviously gone to that top level, and it's really inspirational listening to what you've had to say today. And I think something that the people that are listening to our show regularly now will really value, because the little anecdotes in there from yourself, there's just a lot that people could take away from this interview and find that they could apply stuff, and it would really make a difference. So I really appreciate your time for coming on and having that chat and going through it and talking about, the dark days and the difficult things as well, because we've all got a story, and it sounds like there were some bits in there that would be hard for you. So no, thanks for your time, Alex. I really appreciate it. If people want to have a look, we'll in the description on YouTube and on the podcasts, we will share the blog for the Grim Reaper, if that's okay with you, Alex. And is there anywhere people can sort of find a little bit more about you and look at what you're doing?
Yeah, you could go on alexwerityruns.com if you want to see race reports on races like Grand Union, Spartathlon, Grim Reaper, other things as well, like the Thames Trot 50. So just like ultras that I've done over the years, and it's just basically talks through the routes and may give you a few tips on fueling and kind of things of what not to do. It's kind of set out like what worked well and even better if like a teacher. So hopefully, if you can take something from it, that'd be great. And there's also reports on the 24-hour races I've done as well, and a bit on strategy in there.
So yeah, we'll share that. We'll share that link in the description, guys. If you have, whether you're listening or watching, have a little look in the description, and that link will be down there for you to have a look at. But no, thanks for your time, Alex.
No worries, mate. Thank you for having me.
It's been a real pleasure. And to everyone who's listening or watching, thanks very much for joining us here today on this interview. If you did like the episode, please leave us a comment. We love the comments. We love looking at them afterwards on whatever platform. We check all of them, and we will reply to you and talk about what it is that you've mentioned. If there's any future questions or any guests that you'd like to see, whack it on the comments, tag them in it, and we'll try and get them on as well. In terms of sharing the episode, please do share it. You know, we put a lot of time and effort. Alex has taken his time today to be here. A lot of time and effort goes into the show. So do share it. Do let people know about it that you think might be interested in it. That would be really appreciated as well. But for today, we just want to say thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And we hope that we can meet here again to talk more on the Ultra Running Podcast with me, Coach Marshy.